because we were, and what was so funny is because the projector is kind of in the middle of the crowd because it casts in the center.
Oh, okay.
And so we were kind of close to the projector, so I could hear it running.
Oh, man.
It was, dude, one of the
easily, I didn't know about this place. Dude, this sounds awesome.
Yes. So easily like top 10 movie experience, like theater experiences for me.
Hey, everyone. Johnny Brush here. Welcome to the Jesus on Display podcast. Before we begin today's content, I wanted to say thanks for supporting us here at Fellowship Greenville with your gifts and your generosity. Because of your giving, we get to share resources like this podcast with you to help reach you wherever you are in your life with Jesus. If you'd like to support the ministry of Fellowship Greenville, you can head to fellowshipgreenville.org/give to get started. Thanks so much for your support, and we hope you enjoy today's episode. All right.
Are we on?
Oh. We're going.
Here we are.
We are here. Hey, Chandler.
It's less formal. I love it.
It is.
Here we are. Hi, Johnny.
Here we are.
What are we doing?
This is another one of those. I'm coming to really love these episodes. This is super energizing for me. It's a movie episode, everyone. We're reviewing a movie.
Yes.
And I really, really love it. And for those of you, this is your first time joining us.
Yeah.
And you're like, why are they talking
what
about movies?
What are we doing here?
Well, we have a ton of reasons, but to keep it brief, we chose movies because there are so many wonderful ways to engage with story in the world.
That is correct.
But movies are unique. There are podcasts and books and video games and all that kind of stuff, most of which are done alone.
And isolation.
Movies have entire buildings dedicated to people getting together to watch them as a group.
And you don't like watch, I mean, I guess some people do. You don't watch video, someone play video games. Like you watch movies together.
Yeah.
It's a family thing.
TV shows, maybe you'll get like just your family, but to get like
a collective.
You don't know anybody.
Right.
None of us know each other, but we're here for the same purpose. It's really, really fun.
Community.
So that's just our plug for theaters. You need to go to the movies.
Go,
it's really, really good.
Keep the theaters alive for sure.
Yeah. So we love movies.
Yeah. We love storytelling. It's a big, big component of what we're doing. Here at Fellowship Greenville, like it's not new. We're not inventing anything. We're just joining in on the conversation and discussing various movies. But today, it's a very special day.
What's our episode? What are we? What movie, Chandler?
The movie we're going to talk about today is 2017. Came out Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk.
Woo, yes.
Yeah. So a big year for Christopher Nolan that year. He's made a handful of movies. You know,
just
some good ones, some really good ones, actually.
They're okay.
So yeah, this one's centered around the events at Dunkirk. So it's historical. It's like his first take on a historical movie and an account that actually happened.
Yeah. And as always, before we keep going, if you haven't seen this movie,
please
stop listening. And I was actually talking to someone about this today, Matt Densky. We were talking about Dunkirk. He's never seen it.
Oh.
And I was saying, there aren't really spoilers for historical movies.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you know what's going to happen.
Right.
But at the same time, the way this movie builds tension and stuff, it's really unique. And we don't want to spoil anything. So just stop listening to the podcast and go watch the movie.
Yeah. It is a very specific perspective on this account. So there really isn't a way to spoil it. But the movie itself is very well done, very well made. Mm-hmm. And you should go watch it for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah. So as from here on out, like just, take a break.
Yeah.
And come back later because we want you to talk, or we want you to listen in on the conversation about how the gospel ties in with this movie.
Yeah, and unlike other Christopher Nolan movies, it's a pretty short runtime.
Yeah,
hour 45.
Yeah, 45, 50. That time. Yep.
So it doesn't
under 2 hours.
Yeah, it doesn't take a long time to sit down, carve some time out.
And it goes by quick. Mm-hmm. I'll say that. Like the way he puts it together, the way it's edited, it's very, very quick and stressful.
it's very stressful.
But speaking of that, like we always talk about what it was like when you were first viewing it. I think that's cool. I like hearing the perspectives of people watching it, experiencing the movie for the first time.
For sure.
And it brings a lot of energy to the topic.
Yeah. So my first time, I didn't see it in IMAX
because
I was dumb.
You know, Nolan, he made it for IMAX.
Yeah, I know. Nolan makes almost all of his movies specifically for IMAX.
Right.
But I was at Hollywood 20. And I remember walking out of the theater with a few feelings. It was like, one was I was just really tense.
Right.
It was so stressful.
Mm-hmm.
But two, I remember being really surprised at how simple the movie was.
Right.
It's really straightforward compared to, if you had seen Interstellar or Inception or any of the Batman trilogy or Memento, Prestige, all of that, there's just like so much going on. And they're usually like really heady. Like you got to pay attention. You
can't miss a moment.
And this one was really straightforward.
Yeah.
I mean, he still did his Nolan take on it.
Yeah.
Time. But I remember just leaving the theater, like that was very understandable. And I felt it. And you can almost feel what all the characters were feeling, that relief of rescue, mm-hmm. you know? So I remember feeling that really distinctly, but also being surprised that like that wasn't the Nolan that I expected to get, you know?
Yeah. You always think about like, okay, the director's going to have a signature, a way of telling a story. And he does, but mm-hmm. still, even so, back then when it came out in 2017, it was like, okay, we've seen all his content thus far and what it's about and the layers upon layers that he has and what he dabbles in as far as the structure and the plot and all that.
Yeah.
But this one, like, again, it was just like a breath of fresh air. And my first time watching it was in Charlotte, North Carolina. I don't know if anybody knows about this place. I'm sure it's pretty popular to the area. It's called Discovery Place. It's really made for like younger kids, like to like,
oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, little activities here and there, kind of like the Children's Museum downtown Greenville here in South Carolina. But they have a IMAX dome, like a planetarium type mm-hmm. thing. In certain theaters, you know, they would release a 70mm print of the movie in IMAX. And just so happened, I was in Charlotte, because that's where my family's from, and they released it that weekend in July in 2017. And the IMAX dome in Discovery Place had the 70mm print. And so I was literally over the moon excited because, one, Christopher Nolan fan.
Yeah.
Two,
yeah.
it's 70mm print. Like, you're actually watching mm-hmm. it on film. And so me and my wife, we had a date night. Wow. My mom and dad watched our only son at the time, because it was 2017. We only had one mm-hmm. child. Went to this Discovery Place, and we could literally see them through this glass wall, essentially, loading up the film into the projector.
So good, dude.
And I was,
wow,
I was fascinated. It was like we were at a museum, and I was just like watching this unveil, watching it happen. So they put the reel in, which is super fun to watch. And so when you walk in, it's a dome. So like, it's not your typical flat screen, like it's surrounding you.
So were you like laying back a little bit?
Kind of. You do have to lean back further just so you can see the full experience. But I remember, because what was so funny is because the projector is kind of in the middle of the crowd because it casts in the center.
Oh, okay.
And so we were kind of close to the projector, so I could hear it running.
Oh, man.
It was, dude, one of the easily...
I didn't know about this place. Dude, this sounds awesome.
Yes. So easily like top 10 movie experience, like theater experiences for me. But dude, from the opening scene, like the immersive nature of that movie, because it's shot in IMAX, the opening scene, it's like you're, you know, that first shot is they're on the street walking.
Yeah.
And when it started, I was we're there. Like, we're with them.
Hey, let's stop recording right now and drive up there.
Yeah.
And go see Oppenheimer that's coming out tonight.
I know. It was a really cool experience. I mean, I remember walking out and just feeling like I was in the clouds.
You were
just
there.
Because it was so impactful. Big fan of his work, but also just like, I've never seen history presented in such a way that, one, feels real, and two, you have a signature style of a director. And it just, the way he does time, like it's overlapping, the structure of the plot is very smart. And
well, I read some kind of feedback reviews that apparently around 30 different former soldiers, veterans, from the beach at Dunkirk went to the premiere and saw it, and they came out saying, that brought us right back there.
Oh,
it felt exactly how it was. But ironically, they said, but the score was louder than the actual bombardment of the day, and we didn't appreciate that,
which
Nolan thought was hilarious.
Yeah, he likes to to amp up that music for sure in the score.
Which
in
was Hans Zimmer for this one, right?
Yeah, it was Hans Zimmer.
As usual.
I think that was his last one.
With him?
Because I think after that was Tenet, and he got Ludwig, I think is his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Really, really solid experience. I remember walking out, and my wife was like, so what'd you think? I was like, I don't know what to say, because I was just completely transported
very
to
immersive.
That time. That's kind of why we even chose this movie, mm-hmm. because it's, one, it's an immersive experience. It begs to be seen on a big screen.
Yeah.
But still, like, in the context of your home, like, even, I mean, I know oftentimes when we're at work and we get to have a break, like we'll watch a movie with headphones on or something.
Oh yeah.
Even that's good because the sound quality's there and you know, you don't get the image.
Yeah. And the score of this movie is kind of a character of itself.
Yeah.
Because there's this constant ticking sound in the background, kind of giving you this tension of countdown of time.
Yeah. So and what's the ultimate why? Like why this movie particularly?
Yeah. So why Dunkirk? Well, really, this movie it puts you face to face with a scenario, mm-hmm. historical scenario, that begs the question, what happens when you're seemingly out of options mm-hmm. and there's absolutely no way out?
Yeah.
Basically, when hope is completely lost,
right.
what do you still hope for? Like, is there anything left mm-hmm. to hope on? And the answer to the question is fantastic, but we'll get there. We'll get there eventually.
Basically, it's because Christopher Nolan loves time, like this is a time crunching, like stress vortex. And it's, you put that on the back of a historical event and you've got a really compelling story.
Yeah. Only Nolan could find a way to do a historical retelling and then put his stamp on it that makes it still feel.
Yeah. Well, what's so unique about it is that there are three timelines that are woven together and they all work. Like it seems like, okay, like you're trying to put the pieces together, but they're working together to build to this conclusion mm-hmm. that is centered on rescue.
Yeah. And those were being, it was air.
Yep. The mole.
Sea and land.
Yeah.
And air is taking place over the course of an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Sea is taking place over the course of a day. And then land is taking a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's all happening so simultaneously, but.
Yeah. What's so cool about it too, is that like anybody who's a history buff or, you know, is into this kind of thing, anybody's going to deem this like fact-based story is a miracle.
Yeah.
So I think that's why when we were talking about which movie we would do, we would, you know, go to that. Like, we're just like, this is deemed a miraculous event.
Yeah,
because
multiple,
of what happened.
I read that multiple headlines the day after, like there were newspaper printings the next day, multiple headlines calling it a miracle of their rescue and stuff. So
right. So let's unpack the immediate problem like we do. Like, I know all stories tend to do this. I mean, it happens in Genesis 3, like there's a media problem. So what's the Genesis 3 moment in this movie? Like,
you know, with Genesis 3, you have this calm before the storm. There's this, it's set up as this beautiful, pristine thing that gets destroyed pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And this movie starts out really calm. These soldiers walking through the street. It mm-hmm. looks like there's confetti in the air, maybe a celebration or something. You're like, where are we?
What's happening?
And they're just walking. They're not talking. It's completely quiet. And then immediately they're under gunfire.
Mm-hmm.
And you quickly put together that they are some allied soldiers
mm-hmm.
at some country being attacked by the Germans.
Right.
And, you know, they are on the run.
Mm-hmm.
And only one survives immediately. And he makes it to the beach at Dunkirk and sees already there thousands of soldiers mm-hmm. in waiting.
Yep.
And so we're kind of put face to face immediately with the problem of what are these soldiers waiting on?
Right.
And you never, correct me if I'm wrong, but you never see any Nazi soldiers.
No, you don't. They just mention the enemy and they
presence.
Yeah, there's a presence.
You just feel this ominous presence the whole time that is encroaching in on their spot on the beach.
Right.
And they're clearly outnumbered
mm-hmm.
And trying to escape and on the run.
Yeah. I love about that scene too is like they're it's almost like they're in secret trying to make it down this street without being seen.
Yeah.
But there's like papers flying through the air and one of the soldiers catches a paper and it basically displays how close they are to
hope. Yeah.
So you get like remnants of like hope. And one of the soldiers looks into a window because it's a town because people mm-hmm. live there or they lived there. And there's like, you know, houseware and like mm-hmm. apple pie left over and he's just like, oh, I want some of that.
Yeah.
So they just get these little remnants of home and hope, like even in the beginning, but right out of the gate. There's gunfire. Yeah. So like that issue is established pretty much immediately. I want to say, I want to clock it next time I watch it just to see how quick that gunfire starts, just to, out of curiosity.
It's got to be like 2 minutes.
It
like
has to be.
It's like not
it's
long.
It's really quick.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's 300,000 men trapped on the beach.
Yeah.
And I think what's so great about Christopher Nolan is that he gets so many extras and it's believable. Like you're watching it happen and you can tell that this is practical.
Yep.
It's happening. Like,
it feels very real. I also read that he wanted it to be like the old days before CGI where they wanted to create, you know, the simulation of a crowd, they would use cardboard or wood cutouts.
Right.
And he did thousands of these like wood cutouts of soldiers to make it look
really filled out. It's really smart. It's really unique how he frames everything. So they're just, I mean, from the get-go, like Johnny said, like it's immediate gunfire. One soldier survives, and you kind of follow him throughout the first, at least the first, you know, 10 minutes or so. And they're just in, everybody's engulfed in these life-threatening scenarios. But what's so crazy about all of it is that even though all that's happening and they're in constant danger, they can basically see home from where they're at.
Yeah.
Like it's,
because where Dunkirk is located across the water, it's like not far at all to just take a boat.
I always think about
the
Red Sea. Like I think about that too. It's like just promised land. It's
gotta
like
cross
right
the waters and get through the waters.
It's great.
But yeah, so we're, as the audience, we're watching it and we're wondering, is rescue coming?
Right.
And
it doesn't seem like it is. Like you're, because they're just getting hit left and right.
And
it's
they
like,
find out that these ships can't make it in time because, again, there's this like constant ticking in the background in the score, this countdown, feeling this like pressure of the enemy slowly making their way to the beach.
Right.
And if they don't get out in time, they're done for.
Yeah.
And so we're wondering, is rescue coming? And if it is, how's it going to get here? Like, who's going to help them out?
And there are like certain sequences and scenes that show off that just taking over, the lack of hope completely engulfs them. Like there are soldiers just like giving up because they're, you know, right next to the ocean. There are soldiers just like dropping all their stuff and going and just
going
ending it,
drown themselves.
Because they don't want to die by the hand of the Germans. So they just give up. So like that hope is still sprinkled throughout, but you do have those moments where it's like, oh man, like is it lost completely? Like you just you just don't know.
Yeah, and we're introduced to the start of the redemptive arc when we are introduced to Tom Hardy's character.
Yeah, Tom Hardy.
Farrier is his name, and he's this pilot of a Spitfire airplane.
Yeah.
And he's in the air realm, obviously, and just crushing it. I mean, he's just taking out German airplanes left and right. And it every time we go to him in the plane, it feels like, this might be our guy.
Right.
Maybe he can help us out and at least protect them until, you know, rescue can come.
Right.
And then we're also shown Kenneth Branagh's character, Commander Bolton, and he's on the dock with them waiting for him.
Yeah.
And you can feel his heart. Like he loves all these men and he just wants rescue to come.
Right.
And he's the one that says, you can almost see it. And he goes, see what? And he goes, home.
Yeah.
It's like right there.
Like we're so close.
Yeah.
Survival looked a lot different. I mean, it was just, you know, there's no victory here, but it has to look a little bit different.
Right.
We just have to get out of here. And so even in the midst of this timeline of beach, 1 week, air, a day, boat, an hour, like they're collapsing on top of each other. And there's tragic things happening, like there's ships going down because of submarines. I mean, literally by land, sea, and air, like there's attack happening.
Attack all over.
So the rescue is like slowly building in those timelines, and there's glimpses of hope throughout.
Yeah.
And what's so great about it too is that, there are moments where like they're trying to just do whatever they can to survive, but this is where the art comes in, is that the humans begin and the other English across the channel, they're banding together to come up with a plan to help people survive. Like they're
civilians.
Yeah, civilians
just
are
like,
trying to come in.
They're getting their like yachts and their fishing boats and stuff.
Yep, whatever they can get.
Yeah, and that dad, I forget his character's name, but he gets his boys.
Yeah,
or his son and his son's friend, and they kind of go, and his son's like, "What are we doing?" And he's like, "We've got a job to do."
Right.
Like they're waiting for us, and if we can even just get 15 soldiers out of there, you know.
Yeah. That's a great line too, man. I love that line so much.
Yeah, and then I kind of see Tom Hardy's character as this like angelic force. So Chan and I were watching this, and we were kind of talking about it, like the planes in the sky, like constantly hovering over, protecting these men on the ground, are like angels. And I thought of Psalm 91, where it says that God will command His angels concerning you, that He will task them with your protection,
right,
and like send them your way. And then I thought of Kenneth Branagh's character, the commander, is kind of this pastor of sorts, where he's like watching over the flock and radioing out and trying to get help and rescue. And then even when the rescue finally does come, he's like the last to leave. Like he's just making sure everyone goes first. He's laying down his life.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it, man. It was just such a beautiful image.
Yeah. It's constant too. Like you're just surrounded by it. And that redemptive arc, you know, it takes time because this movie is, like we said earlier, it's stressful. Like it's building up to that moment. But once it arrives and you realize what civilians are doing, it just becomes so much more hopeful.
Right. Like
there's a turn in the stress. Yeah. And then it just becomes pure hope by the end of it.
Yeah, and that's that. I can't remember if it was the tagline of the movie or if people just started saying this, but it was, when you can't get home, home comes for you.
Yeah, so that was like, I forget who said it, but there was a line. One of our pastors, Jim Thompson here, sent me a tweet from somebody after it came out.
Yeah.
And that was... That was his takeaway.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it was some. I don't remember who it was. It was a popular pastor maybe, but that was pastor's takeaway was that when you can't get home, home comes for you.
And that moment in the movie when they finally do get home,
mm-hmm.
like you hear this ticking sound the entire movie.
Yeah,
and it's super tense. Bombs are dropping, bullets are flying, and a bunch of these soldiers get on these boats. They make it home and they get on this train to get home, and the ticking stops, and it's like. So deafening the silence because it feels so at rest and so peaceful, and it's just this beautiful moment of arrival at home at like the redemption and the rescue. But so that idea when you can't get home, home comes for you. It's kind of low hanging gospel
it's
fruit.
A parallel, it's a direct parallel.
It's like
man.
if the Lord just stayed where He was and said, "Why don't you just work really hard to make it to me?"
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it's impossible. Yeah. And he knows it. So it's like, I've got to bring the kingdom to you.
Right. And deliverance in that, and this is one of the, I think, part of the redemptive arc, but also like gospel takeaway. It's like in rescue, in deliverance, there has to be a sacrifice.
Right.
Like there
has to be made.
It has to be made. Like that's, I mean, in scripture, that's the pattern
mm-hmm.
that we see like constantly.
See that with Tom Hardy's character.
Yeah. Yeah.
When he protects them. His plane runs out of gas.
Yeah.
And once they're all gone, he has to glide land his plane on the
beach.
He's
out of fuel, man.
He's
out of fuel.
His plane catches fire. He's watching it burn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a quick glimpse. You see these Nazi soldiers take
him away.
And so he sacrifices his own life so that all these 300,000 men can
get home.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. There's a scene too where some of the soldiers are trapped in the channel. And Tom Hardy's character, they're another plane is closing in, and there's oil spilling in the water, all these things.
Oh yeah,
yachts are going by trying to like save people, and Tom Hardy's character makes one last turn to take out the last plane, dude.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in the IMAX Dome Theater, bro, chills all over my body. I was like that last minute rescue type thing was just like, oh man, here he comes.
Yeah,
it was so fun to watch.
So let's talk briefly about Cillian Murphy's character.
Oh dude, I don't want to leave him out for sure.
His role is a little smaller than it usually is in Nolan films, but he plays a soldier who found a way to escape on a boat, but the boat went down.
Yeah,
and he's stranded in the middle of the ocean. Mm-hmm. And one of these civilian ships finds him and rescues him and gets him on the boat.
Yeah,
and when he realizes they're going towards the fight and not away,
he panics.
He freaks out.
Yeah,
you know, because he's scarred and panicked by what he just escaped from.
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps saying, "I can't go back. I'm not going back. I just want to go home." And to me, that was like this weird analogy of the tough reality that what we're called to, I think, a lot of times as believers, is to be the ones who are willing to give up our own comfort.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, if you really play the analogy out, he was closer to home than they were.
Yeah,
but
he made it halfway.
He had to turn around and go, I might be further along than they are.
Right.
But I need to turn around and go help those that are still behind me.
Yeah.
And I think in that there's this analogy of like those believers who have been at it for a while and maybe they're further in their walk with the Lord and they feel closer. They're like, man, I can almost taste heaven. Like it's right here.
Yeah.
But there's people way behind you who need you to turn around and go help them out.
Yeah.
And he was kind of the antithesis of that. Like he didn't want to.
No.
He was literally fighting it. He couldn't bear to go back. Which there's a lesson there of like, you know, how willing are you to lay down your comfort and all that to actually turn around and go back into the fight with
right.
your brothers and sisters.
That brief moment of like seemingly escaping mm-hmm. to then be faced with the question, like, will you go back and potentially lay down your life for your
yeah.
brothers?
Is Are you willing to do that? Deal.
And that's another, I think of another Christopher Nolan movie. It's The Dark Knight. He's like, endure.
Yeah.
Endure it. Like
yeah.
it's part of the journey, so yeah. endure the pain and endure
and
the suffering.
And Tom Hardy's character, you know, like while he's flying his plane, fighting all these guys, he keeps checking his gas gauge.
Oh, yeah.
And you know he's thinking, I might have enough to get back home.
Right.
Or do I just run out of gas yeah. doing this and just land my plane
yeah.
in enemy territory?
What's so smart about that, too, is his, I think during some of the dogfighting, his gauge, like the glass that could read the fuel gauge mm-hmm. shattered.
Yeah.
And so he's talking to another pilot that's with him and saying, like, we filled up at the same time.
Right.
How, like, where is yeah. your gas level
keep
at?
Checking
like,
with him.
Keep checking. So he kept checking and kept checking and kept checking just so he could
yeah.
pick up
and
on
then him. That guy goes down.
Yeah.
And so he's, and like, so he's like,
I gotta figure this out.
I have no idea how much is left in him. Yeah. So tense.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. It's constant. It's an hour and 50 minutes of just
yep.
pure stress. But it's it ends in a great place.
Yeah. Rescue comes yep. and according to Christopher Nolan, he met with a ton of historians about this moment in the yep. war, and many historians agree that this moment
mm-hmm.
turned the tide for the Allied
yeah.
forces.
Yeah, because you got
like,
Churchill.
Had they lost all 300 of those soldiers,
mm-hmm.
the war would have went a completely different direction.
Right.
And so this was kind of a hinge point moment where they think this is what won the war for the Allied forces mm-hmm. was this miracle moment
right.
where home came to rescue all
yeah,
these men.
Good grief.
Really great.
What a parallel there.
Yeah.
Well, I love the gospel takeaways here. I mean, when you can't get home, home comes for you. That's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about time too, like because Christopher Nolan uses that as a tactic for storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
It's a movie that just brilliantly displays time rapidly passing.
Yeah.
But also time can't move by quicker because we gotta get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, and the score and music we talked about earlier is made to sound like a ticking clock,
mm-hmm.
like, and you feel that too. And in these moments, like the constant struggle, the constant array of things that can get in the way of just feeling like you just can't make it through another day. Like it's
yep.
just there's a constant feeling of that in this movie. And sometimes it displays cruelty because there are soldiers trying to make it out of the water,
yep.
and oil spills, and they're just going left and right, like, and they're losing their life like constantly. One thing to note too is that God's timing isn't our timing. Like
yeah.
it's a great example of that. In the midst of struggle, in the midst of that feeling like there's no way out.
Yeah.
He's working.
I think of the Psalms a lot of times mm-hmm. it just declares, I will wait on the Lord. Because when you think about it, that's really all we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can't accelerate this timeline.
Right.
We are in submission to what he's doing.
Right.
And there's this trust we have to have, like those soldiers on the beach, like we really have nothing else to do but just wait and hope that
right.
this is going to work out for us.
Yeah.
And again, as believers, we have that assurance, like we know the end,
mm-hmm.
we know that our hope is sure. And so our waiting isn't in vain.
Right.
It's with a guarantee that like he will bring that rescue.
Yeah.
Like it is going to happen.
Yeah. It's great, man. It's such a, I mean, granted the parallels are kind of out there,
yeah.
but unless you like look beyond the fact that it is a historical event, I mean, you wouldn't really be able to pick up on some of these things.
Right,
you're
yeah.
just watching it as, oh, this is history, but no, like this is a big, big moment.
Yeah,
and it also it's a direct callback to what happened for us with Jesus coming
yeah.
to die. Yeah, hope is close by, rescue's on the way. Man, good stuff.
It's fantastic.
I love it.
Highly recommend it.
Yeah, check it out. This is great too because today's a special day.
Yes,
because,
it is.
Christopher Nolan's latest movie comes out today, Oppenheimer.
It does. Oh,
so
Lord.
This is a very strategic episode.
It is on purpose.
Christopher Nolan.
We're trying to keep our expectations in check, but we're very, very excited for
yeah,
this
yeah,
movie.
Yeah. Anyway, but we'd love to do a family watch rating and a gospel lens rating.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wrote something down, like just, you know, in passing and thinking about it. But as far as family watch rating goes, because there's a lot of intensity
mm-hmm.
and it's pretty constant and there's some, not like grisly images, but
yeah.
there is some violence in relation to soldiers trying to survive
right.
and make it out of this horrible event.
Yeah, I think It depends on the family.
Yep.
Chan, you wrote 3.5.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's good. Depending on the family, it might be a 3 out of 5, might be a little bit lower.
Yep.
Depending on, you know, like, war is tough.
Right.
And watching movies about war, especially historical ones, are it can be pretty tough.
Yeah.
But yeah, there, as far as like the violence you see and stuff, it's not like Saving Private Ryan or anything like that where they show everything. It's pretty minimal.
It's more just tension.
It's just really tense and kind of stressful. But yeah, 3.5, I think that's good.
Yeah.
Gospel Lens. I mean, we only ever pick movies that are going to have a really high Gospel Lens rating.
Yeah, so we're not ever going to say 1 out of 5.
Right.
Nice
Yeah, don't watch this movie.
I went with 4 out of 5. I mean, it could probably go higher, but like, I mean, because it's just factual.
Yeah, yeah.
You watch it as that. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it on Gospel Lens terms, then you kind
of
look at it differently.
Yep.
You really do.
Which is what we're supposed to do anyway with
that's
everything.
That's right, exactly.
Put your gospel glasses on, people.
Yep, get those... those glasses.
Yeah, something we added last episode was our favorite quotes and moments in the movie.
Yeah.
So you want to talk about that?
Yeah, dude. We mentioned one earlier, but it's when Kenneth Branagh says, you can practically see it, and one of the other soldiers says, see what? And he's like, home. Like, that's all he says. It's like, oh!
Right there.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, there are days where you feel that in your walk with the Lord where you're like, I feel like I can see it.
Yeah.
We're almost there.
Yeah.
Yeah, who says all we did is survive? And
so
that's enough.
The I think if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure old Harry Styles says it.
Harry Styles is in
this movie.
His actor debut, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's the one that says it. And then there's an older gentleman. I think he's blind, and he's handing out like outfits, like new clothes, and he's like, "Hey, if all you did was survive, that's enough."
Yeah, it's when they got back. It's when they made it to
England.
Yeah, and then the dad on the boat says, there's no hiding from this, son. We have a job to do.
Yep.
Which is great. It's like, you can try your best to pretend like we don't have a task in front of us, but we got some work to do.
Yep.
Like, we can't ignore this.
Right.
I love that.
This is knocking on our door. Yeah. Favorite, like, moment, too. One of the best moments is when Tom Hardy's character finally lands the plane back on the beach. And he's got a flare, sets his plane on fire. And there's a behind the back shot, just like slowly dollying behind his back.
Which is also a Nolan staple.
He loves that
shot.
I love that moment.
But yeah, that was probably that moment was my favorite moment in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite shot in the movie was near the beginning when the Nazis are bombing the beach.
Yeah. Oh,
and
dude,
that character that we're following in the beginning dives down face first in the sand, covers his head.
Yep.
And you see in the distance the bombs slowly getting closer and closer to him.
Right.
It's
like zoomed in on his face, and you can see the explosions happening.
Yeah,
like
in the
simultaneously
background.
Happening closer and closer to him.
It's so
great shot. There's another shot when a ship is going down, and the camera is like upside down, and you see the water like rush in from a weird angle.
And these,
it's brilliant.
There are these IMAX cameras that they strap to the boat, and those cameras are like,
they're 1,000 pounds.
And they're loud. There's so much money.
Yeah. They're expensive.
So scary.
I hear that they're just ridiculously loud. Maybe they've gotten better, but it sounds like just gunfire themselves. They're just
fantastic.
And of course the end, like the main soldiers that we're following, who makes it out of it alive, is reading Winston Churchill's speech, the We Shall Fight speech.
Yeah.
And that moment, I mean, even him reading it monotone because he's just been through
a
terrible situation.
You can imagine what it felt like to hear Churchill.
Oh, absolutely. Great scene. Dude, so many great moments. It's not really like a character-esque story.
Yeah.
Like, it's an experiential story.
The characters kind of, because most of them are fictional characters, these aren't real pilots. I think Kenneth Branagh's character was a real character, but Hardy's character wasn't, you know, a factual guy.
No.
But they're more like symbols. Like, these characters are symbols of protection, rescue,
homecoming. You don't watch it going into it. Oh, you're going to walk out going, oh, I can quote that movie. I can watch that movie. It's more of just like experience.
It's an experience.
It's great. But, man, cool. Whew, that's a fun talk.
Yeah,
I love
it.
Also, like talking about like Chris Nolan's movies in general. Like, I feel like this will probably be in the top 5 for his movies and worth checking out.
What is your favorite Nolan movie?
My favorite Nolan movie is, in my personal top 3.
Dark Knight?
No.
I
love The Dark Knight.
Oh, and it was Memento.
Memento is his, like, so he made a movie before Memento called The Following.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a 60-minute film in black and white. But Memento is probably my favorite. Yeah. Number one.
That's another trippy movie.
Yeah. And like, it's timelines again, like his, well, he taught me so much just about editing and the nonlinear approach, all that.
The first Nolan movie I ever saw was The Prestige, and I saw it in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember right away, what's the first line where he says, are you watching closely?
Yeah, you're watching closely. Yeah.
And I leaned forward and I said out loud, yep. Like, I was like, yep, I am watching, closely.
I think the first one I saw was Batman Begins.
Really?
Yeah, because that was right before Prestige came out.
Yep.
And I remember walking out of Batman Begins with two fists in the air. I'm like, yes, they got it right.
God is so good.
God is real.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love it. He's a great filmmaker. If you haven't seen any of his movies, look him up. Check it out. But
we should do a 10-hour podcast episode and
break
just
down.
Watch his movies all and his review movies. Them while we're doing it.
Honestly, dude, like he has a lot of great gospel parallels in his movies.
Amazing.
They're insane. Especially Interstellar. If you haven't seen Interstellar,
yeah.
What are you doing?
What are you even doing?
But we do love storytelling. It's a big part of what we do in not only in the communications realm, but just in general at Fellowship Greenville. And if you've missed out on any other episodes that talk about the value of story or any discussions on specific movies, they're like all available in this podcast. And here's what's great, so great about stories, is that we're all a part of one. And we all have one.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're interested in sharing your story with us of coming to faith in Jesus, you can go online right now to fellowshipgreenville.org/share-my-story, where you'll be guided through this sharing process. There's just a handful of questions on there that you can answer and help formulate your story so it makes sense to others. We recognize that there are sensitive stories out there, and being vulnerable is a big deal. But we welcome the transparency involved in sharing, and we welcome your story as we're all a part of God's story of hope and redemption. We believe that talking about these life-change moments connects us and makes us feel like family. We're like family because we're part of God's family, but sharing each other's and bearing each other's burdens helps us feel more like family. Awesome. Well, thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah.
We will see you later.
Bye, guys. The Jesus on Display podcast is produced right here at Fellowship Greenville in Greenville, South Carolina. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Follow and share this podcast with anyone who might be interested or curious about our church community or how storytelling unites us and helps us feel more connected. To actively keep up with what's going on at our church, head to our website at fellowshipgreenville.org, follow us on all social media platforms, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Thanks for tuning in. Grace and peace to you for your week. We'll see you next time.